This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba here through the rest of the hour to talk with you about what's new in healthy living. Share some down-to-earth advice and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. Our phone number, and a good time to give a call now, at 800-462-7413. Your calls during the hour, some interesting research, Zorba.
Yes, we'll talk about shopping online for food. That's right, shopping online for food. Does it lead to healthier food choices?
Healthier food choices.
That interesting information from Down Under in Oz, in Australia, and what they're doing there. And we'll talk about the CDC and the funding for autism research, a very interesting study that's going to go on, and yet there's controversy.
Yeah, that's
always is.
Surprising to me that there's controversy about funding for research.
Whenever we discuss autism, we always have controversy.
Okay, that's coming up. And what's our recipe?
Texas turkey meatloaf. It's comfort food, spice in it, healthier way, wonderful for dinner tonight, lunch tomorrow, whenever you want to have it. It's a great recipe.
A spicy recipe and a spicy medical myth buster coming up too. Lots for you to stay tuned for here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. A listener with us now, Zorba in Winona, Minnesota. Hi.
Hey, Tom. Hi, Zorba. How are you?
Good. How can we help?
Well, a few weeks ago, I was listening to the show and you had a lot of questions about ear problems. So it prompted me to give you a call because I have a little problem with my ear.
Uh-huh.
I'm a runner, and whenever I do a long, intense workout, my ears get full. It's sort of the same feeling you have when you're flying and you're coming down for a landing.
Oh. Quit doing those long, intensive runs.
That's right. Just stop running. Sit down. Watch television.
Yeah, there you go. And everything will be fine.
That's right. So this happens only when you run? Is it that only that kind of exercise?
It only happens when I run, and it only happens during a very intense workout and for a long period of time. So if I ran a 5K race, it wouldn't happen.
Okay.
But if I ran a half marathon, it happens every time.
It happens. And then how long when you're finished with it does it actually have that sort of full sensation?
It may take an hour or so for it to go away.
Okay. Now, tell me about your allergies. You have allergies? You don't have allergies?
I don't take anything for allergies. Do I notice it? Potentially, yes, but...
Okay, so you've got some stuff, but it doesn't bother you at all.
Yeah.
Post-nasal drip stuff going down the back of your nose?
Yeah, a little bit.
Well, let me tell you what this most likely is. First of all, you've got a tube between your nose and your ears, and it's called the Eustachian tube. Mm-hmm. If you blow your nose now and you pop your ears, what you're doing is actually putting pressure through that tube, and that tube is a ventilatory tube. What happens is you have the outer ear that ends at the eardrum. You have the inner ear, and that includes the organ of Corti, which is where we actually hear things. And then you've got this middle ear, which has three little bones in it, malleus, incus, and stapes. And that middle ear...
Is this going to be on the test?
It's on the test, and it is the... And if you don't know the answer in the test, you don't get to turn off public radio for the rest of your life. That's right. But that middle ear has to basically equalize the pressure between the outside and the inside, and there's a tube that goes to that middle ear called the Eustachian tube. You blow your nose, your ear pops. You go up in an airplane, the tube collapses and you get that funny sensation. You go up in a fast elevator in a tall building like an 80 or 90 story building and your tube collapses as you're going up and down. Your tube is collapsing when you're running. And it's happening because of probably the way you're breathing. It may have to do with how you're holding your breath. It may be that you're not holding your breath, but it's undoubtedly the Eustachian tube that's actually causing the problem. And the treatment for that, the medical treatment for that can be Sudafed. I wouldn't recommend you do it unless you're going to an airplane. I don't tell people to take Sudafed. A steroid nasal spray, it's a medication, and that works very, very well for a lot of people. It's a spray you get by prescription, a squirt or two. But what may work for you is saline nasal spray.
Okay.
Saline nasal spray. There's one non-medicated way you can do it. They come under a variety of names. The most common name is saline nasal spray. Generic, it's cheap. And the other thing is a neti pot. Now, a neti pot is an old-fashioned remedy. They look like a little Aladdin's lamp. You can buy them all over the place now. You learn how to do it where you basically pour a saline solution into one nostril, outside of the other, and it opens up the eustachian tube.
Yeah, but he'd have to be carrying that little neti pot during his run.
Now, that would look funny. You stop for a second and put the neti pot in. It would certainly upset your time.
You use that before the run, and it wouldn't last that.
Well, it may last. The neti pot may be what you need, because what may happen is you may have some mucus from the postnasal drip that's blocking the tube before you're running and is causing the issue. I would use the neti pot before you run. Hmm. It'll cut down on the mucus, and it'll probably solve your problem.
It's not painful. It's just annoying.
It's annoying. No, it is annoying. No, it's not. But these things are not painful. Neti pot number one, nasal spray, if that doesn't work, in addition that you may have to use in the middle of the race, you may have to take a little spray bottle with you and use it. But I would try the neti pot. I think this is a blockage at the end of the eustachian tube, and if you get rid of that with this little neti pot, this old-fashioned remedy, go to the web, write in neti pot. There are a number of name brands. Sign you cleanse. Yeah.
Or maybe you could just spritz at the end of the run, and it wouldn't take an hour or so before
that. Exactly. Yeah, Tom gives a good idea. Maybe spritzing at the end of the run will make a difference. Or you can do what Tom says. Give up running. Eat more junk food. Lots of trans fats. And watch television, baby, and that's where it
is. I run so I can eat those junk
food. There you go. Take care.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate the call. 800-462-7413. A listener now, Zorba, in Edmond, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm fine. A little pain.
Oh, in a little pain. Well, tell us about it.
Well, I'm a runner.
Mm-hmm.
And I am experiencing what I think is sciatic pain. It's in my left leg, and may I say butt on the air?
Yes.
Good.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. No, you may not.
Now, wait a minute. She can say butt because butt is short for buttock.
There are these new FCC rules.
No, I think butt is okay because it's short for buttock.
Term.
No, butt is definitely okay. What you can't say is the other word for donkey. When you are referring to a human part, you can use it if you're referring to the donkey.
You could probably even say that.
Oh, no,
but
I don't think you could
radio.
Say that.
Can't you get away with a little more
but
in public
please
radio?
Go on.
I'm sorry.
You can say the word butt.
Yeah, okay.
And it's running, the pain is running down the back of my leg from my butt to right above the back of my knee.
Mm-hmm.
And it started about a month ago, and I think I know what caused it, but I'm trying not to self-diagnose.
Okay, what caused it? Oh, please, self-diagnose. I love it.
Okay, so I think there were some contributing factors.
Go ahead.
Well, for about 6 months, I stopped stretching.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Either before or after my run. These are short runs. These are like 3-mile runs.
Okay.
I started, as somebody who doesn't drink caffeine, I started having one Red Bull right before I'd run, because it was very hot in Oklahoma at the time.
Wait a minute. Did you have Red Bull and vodka, or was it just plain Red Bull? No, that's the drink. That's what my kids tell me. It's Red Bull and vodka. That you knew, right, Tom?
I didn't.
No, I didn't know that. Please. Go on. Okay.
And I've been working long hours, so I'm sitting a lot.
Ah, there you go. That's it.
So it's not impact?
Well, first of all, sometimes it's difficult to differentiate these things. What happened is the sciatic nerve carries the nerves from the back down to the leg, and it's just a bundle of nerves, okay? Bundle of nerves. So you sit all day doing work. Tell me about the chair.
It's a leather chair.
Is it hard? Is it firm?
Kind of cushy, but my home, I work out of my home now, and my home office is definitely not ergoed.
Uh-huh. Well, it's not ergoed. That's probably it. That's a biggie. That's not a smallie. That's a biggie. One way to ergo the office, and by the way, I love the word ergo. I'm going to use it as a verb now, just like ugo. I'm going to say ergo the office. You know, make it ergometric. It's really, I like it. It's kind of a hip term. We don't get a lot of good medical hip terms. One way to ergo
very
this.
Hip.
One way to ergo this. Hey, I knew what Red Bull was. One way to ergo this is, do you want to lift up your legs, your feet, on the ground not on a pillow, but something that's maybe about 8 to 10 inches high. And you can buy these things in a store. They come at an angle, and they're footrests. And what happens is this takes away the pressure from the sciatic nerve on the chair. because you're pushing up your legs a little bit. In other words, instead of your knees being at a 90-degree angle, they'll be more at a maybe 45-degree or a 50-degree angle, and that will take pressure off the sciatic nerve. So I recommend you put your foot on a footstool. If you use a stool in the house to get up to the upper cabinets like we do because we're short, congenitally short, that's often a little bit too high, but something that's smaller than that. You can buy these in stores. You can do it very simply by putting a couple of pillows underneath your chair and see if it works. The other thing is to add a cushion to the chair. You can buy cushions called donuts. They're used for hemorrhoids, and they work very well for sciatica because they sort of stand, you know, they change the way that you sit. And this often may be all that you need. How many hours a day are you on the chair?
Well, it's about 10, and I take
a
break. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I take a break when my son gets home from school, and then I start up again from 8 to, like, midnight.
What do you do for a living?
I do white-collar crime prevention and detection.
Huh.
Oh, my goodness.
It's like forensic auditing.
Now, that sounds much more interesting than doing a talk radio show. White-collar crime. How did you get this job? That's not exactly on the job board when you're graduating college.
It's not. It evolved. It evolved.
Well, it sounds very interesting.
Our producer says stay away from his tax return, please.
That's not my area.
Oh, okay.
Bribery, kickback, occupational fraud.
Got it. Well, now that we know that we're being audited with this, I would recommend that you, I wouldn't know what I would recommend. But getting back to the issue of your white-collar crime that you're searching in the middle of the night at the internet, I would recommend the footrest, and I would recommend pillows on the bottom of the leg or the donut. I think it's the sitting. It's the 10 hours a day sitting. That's what's doing it. And you want to make sure you get rid of the main issue, which I think is pressure. Physical pressure, not mental pressure.
Okay.
So how old's your kid?
He's seven.
Seven. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Sounds good. Are you training him to go into what's your line of work?
Well, no.
No.
No. Okay. Just checking. Well,
thanks a lot for calling.
Thank you so much.
Keep on going after those white-collar criminals, okay?
Thank you.
Yeah,
I will.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
800-462-7413. Pretty interesting, huh?
Absolutely.
800-462-7413. On to Merrimack, Wisconsin we go now. Hi.
Hi, nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk with you. How can we help?
Well, I have a spur, but it doesn't jingle, jangle, jingle on my heel. It's on my hip.
Hmm. Hip spur.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm wondering if it's possible to dissolve or help dissolve this hip spur.
Hip spur. Well, Zorba will answer that.
Well, heel spurs actually don't dissolve. They once you get them, they stay there forever.
That's a medical myth.
However, the pain from the heel spur can change. And let me just sort of mention that for a second. When people come into the office with heel pain, if we do an x-ray and we see a spur, the spur has been there for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it's been there for a long time. And what happens is it is the tissue around the spur that actually becomes inflamed and is hurt and is painful and is uncomfortable. And it's a matter of fixing that. And often you fix that with a heel cup, little gel foam pad or a hard plastic pad, so you don't walk on the spur. And what happens is the tissue around the spur heals, it's not as inflamed, it gets better, and you have less pain and less discomfort. And that's basically how we end up treating heel spurs. Hip spurs are from arthritis, and you treat those in a non-pharmacological way with stretching exercises, good physical therapy, reduction of weight, you know, doing regular aerobic exercise. All those things have found to be better to reduce the pain and discomfort essentially from osteoarthritis. They really do make a difference. They really do help. But nothing actually dissolves the spur and gets rid of it. And in fact, if we had a way of doing that, that would be great. The treatments from a surgical point of view are replacing the hip. And there's some new treatments whereby they actually sort of clean out the hip and don't replace it. But how effective those treatments are, I couldn't say, because I think in time we don't really know if they're as effective as hip replacement. But your issue is you've got pain with this, right? I mean, that's how they found it.
Yes. Actually, I'm thinking that acupuncture might be a pain mitigator here as opposed to one cortisone shot, which I got.
Uh-huh. Acupuncture can be a great pain mitigator, can be something that's very useful for pain from the hip. And I think that's a great idea. I think doing some cortisone shots can really make a big difference, and I think I would try doing that. Absolutely. I think that would be something that would be worthwhile. Acupuncture from a non-pharmacological point of view of cortisone. You doing any exercise? Have you gone to physical therapy at all?
No, that's why I'm calling you, to find out how to approach it correctly.
I'll tell you, one visit with a physical therapist where they show you good stretching exercises I find to be very, very useful. Sometimes you don't need more than one, but one visit with a physical therapist can make a huge difference and can be very, very worthwhile. I think that's what I would do. That would be the first step that I would try.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much.
A pleasure.
Thank you very much. We appreciate the call. 800-462-7413.
You know, the other issue, the other non-pharmacological way of really treating hip pain can be through massage therapy, can be very, very worthwhile. Mm-hmm. And chiropractic. Some chiropractors are really very good at not just taking care of the pain of the back, but really doing some manipulative therapy of the hip that can help people with musculoskeletal problems. And they can be quite worthwhile. While in terms of hip pain.
Now, you mentioned some research on, this seems strange to me for this program, Zorba, shopping online.
That's right, shopping
can be a
online.
Healthy choice. So now, in other words, instead of having to actually get off my butt and walk to the car and drive to the grocery store and push a cart around, now I can just sit in my easy chair, do the computer. They can bring it to me.
Well, no, but
would they feed it to me as well?
Tom, being the technophobe and the Luddite that you are, you cannot imagine that anyone possibly use a computer for shopping.
Yeah.
But some people do that. What they do is they shop online. This is much more common in Australia, where this study came from.
Mm-hmm.
And then the food is delivered to their house.
I know.
So here it is, you're a busy person.
You don't do any exercise involved in the shopping.
Well, you may be working. You may be working hard. Yeah. It may be that going to the store. Look at an urban environment like New York City.
Yeah.
So you have to get out, you have to go to the store, you have to get on the stuff, you have to lug the stuff back, maybe on a subway, or pay money to go and get a cab. And sometimes shopping online
people
is
have disabilities
easier.
Too and have difficulty.
They have disabilities, absolutely, and they shop online.
Yeah.
Well, lo and behold, in Australia, what they did was they have a shopping service online where they give suggestions. And the suggestions, you may go, and a very good example, and you may want to get a cookie. Mm. And you pick a cookie that has trans fats and that is highly fat. Well, if you shop using certain shopping software, it will suggest other cookies.
It may say
this one has less saturated fat than that cookie. And what they found is that when they, and this was a particular study, they looked at people who shopped online, that when suggestions were made for healthier food, people bought healthier food. Now, when I go to the grocery store, I do probably half or two-thirds of the shopping in our house.
Mm-hmm.
And, you tend to buy things that you like and things that you're comfortable with and things that you've shopped with before, but you don't, and if you look at, and you buy an alternative food, you base it on the color of the packaging or where it is on the shelf or where you are in the store. When you're online, it's a different world. And so a suggestion may be made to you, and what they found was that people will take healthier suggestions if they're brought to them online, so that online shopping for food may actually be kind of a nutritional educational program.
So I'm looking for fudge cookies, and it says try some graham crackers instead. I'm likely to say, oh yeah, I don't really need those fudge cookies. Give me those graham crackers. Yum, yum.
No. It may be fudge cookie number one versus fudge cookie number two. And you chose fudge cookie number one because you like that, and they're saying, why don't you try fudge cookie number two?
Uh-huh.
It has fewer calories and less fat and may be more nutritious. You're right. You're not going to substitute necessarily a fudge cookie for a graham cracker, yum, yum, but you may substitute one versus another and try different things.
The problem with the
online, it's not a bad idea.
One of the problems online, I would think, though, is produce, because I know I do a lot of the shopping, and you want to pick out the right bananas, you're worried about whether they're going to do the best bananas they can.
Well, that's a good point. You're right. You're not going to go to a store which gives you bananas that look yucky. But on the other hand, you're going to say, I don't like this produce. I'm going to send it back. So I have a feeling that you've got this personal shopper. They're going to give you good produce. But I understand. You want to squeeze the melons when you go there, right? Is that what you're talking about?
I don't buy melons.
Can we say that on the air? Squeeze the melons or squeeze the banana?
You can't say squeeze.
Yes, we can. It's short. For buttock, it's acceptable.
800-462-7413.
I think we should do My Word Medical or something like that, clearly.
1-800-462-7413. A listener joins now from Knoxville, Tennessee. Hi.
Hi, Tom and Dr. Zorba.
What's up?
I belong to a hiking group of energetic folks that regularly do strenuous hikes to the nearby mountains, sometimes as long as 26 or 27 miles in a day.
Oh.
Several of these people are even in their 60s and 70s, and a few in their early 80s.
Wow.
Occasionally, however, a hiker will develop a severe leg cramp to the point that they can't walk, especially if the weather is hot and they sweat a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I have started carrying a mineral supplement that seems to have demonstrated an amazing ability to relieve these cramps. And I call these dead hiker pills. Anyway, these pills contain a quickly absorbed magnesium and potassium aspartate. And my question is, do you have any thoughts on why they work so well?
First of all, I congratulate your group on including people of all ages. I think that's an excellent thing. One of the things that I dislike myself about senior citizen housing is that it tends not to be multi-generational, and I think people lose out a lot on multi-generational issues. You know, I don't think we were made to just be with people of our own age when doing things. I think we're made to be with a whole variety of people, and I think being with a 60-year-old when you're in your 20s is really nifty because you get to see mentoring of what it's like to be an active person in their 60s and 70s, and when you're in your 20s, that looks really old, but let me tell you, when you're in your 50s, 60s looks like it's just over the hill. It's clearly in a different place. But one of the issues with hiking, first of all, I don't know if it's the, you know, I don't know if this if it's this quick absorption of magnesium or potassium. We know when you're exercising a lot, in the mountains, for instance, you transpire a lot, you sweat a lot, and what happens is you tend to lose a little bit of sodium. You lose sodium with that. And a lot of people then take some salt pills, although just eating a typical snack will have salt in it. You know, typical trail mix has plenty of salt and other things. And that salt is absorbed right away. So, you know, it's not that one form of magnesium is more absorbed quicker than the other. It's really a function of how quickly the tablet absorbs in your small intestine. It's not the way the magnesium is put in there. But I'm not sure why people feel better right away. I just know that sometimes people, if they just take something and they take a pill, there is really a placebo effect.
Yeah.
I know I'm taking something that's salty. I'm sitting. I'm taking my break. And sometimes that's enough to change the endorphins in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And these natural chemicals that are in the brain are clearly open to psychological psychological control in our mind. I was thinking the other day, I was driving into work. I've got a 4-minute drive, 5-minute drive to the office. Seriously. And I was thinking, gosh, I really feel good today. I wonder why. And I was sort of questioning, was it the weather or was it the night before when I had a good meal? Was it the friends that I saw? And then 4 minutes later, I was at work and I forgot what I was thinking about and went into the office.
Yeah.
But I was wondering why my day felt so good. And other days, the same thing will happen and my days won't feel any good. So I mentioned this because here it is. You're in the mountains. You're walking. You're hiking. You feel a little fatigue from that, and you feel like you've lost some salt, and you take these magnesium salt pills, and you feel better. I don't know why they work, but hey, if they work, take them.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling us at 800-462-7413. A couple of weeks back, Zorba, we talked with a caller who was battling bouts of vertigo, remember?
Yes, I do.
We received an unusual tip in our Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox from a listener named Kate, who writes, I have had vertigo symptoms for 12 years and had to live with them until recently. I happened to see a fantastic juggling troupe called the Flying Karamazov Brothers. Do you know the name?
Yes, I do.
I think I do too.
Yes,
after
do.
The show, I was determined to juggle. The first time I tried, I had to stop after a few minutes because the room started spinning and the balls were going everywhere. But I kept trying, and by the end of the month, I had fewer dizzy spells.
Wow.
And I could juggle.
Wow, I think that's a great idea. That's fascinating. You know what you're doing? You're retraining your eye motor coordination. I think that is a fabulous idea. I've never heard of that, and I think it's a wonderful thing because all of a sudden you're looking at balls and you're realizing you can stay up and you're moving, you know, you're learning different ways. I think that is a great idea. I think there are a lot of people who have vertigo. I think she should start a vertical treatment club.
Exactly
right. She ought to patent it. She ought to go online.
Exactly right.
Juggling is the cure for vertigo.
Do classes, make a little money?
I love it. I think she can go from town to town. I love it.
Can you juggle?
Not at all.
I can't either.
But I don't have vertigo.
I've tried.
But I don't have vertigo.
I've tried to juggle.
Took her a month. She was motivated. She was motivated. How much have you tried?
I've tried.
Yeah, how much?
A couple of minutes every now and then during my life.
A couple of minutes every now and then. That doesn't count. It takes a month. You have to learn to juggle. It's like learning to type.
That
it's like learning other things.
What a great idea.
It is a great idea. Thank you for that tip. I am going to give that, and I will give you credit, Kate.
We like to juggle all of your comments, tips, and questions. Just send us an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
A recipe coming up for Texas turkey meatloaf. Spicy recipe. More of your calls, some more research, and a very spicy medical myth buster as well. Lots to stick around for here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Want to talk with Zorba? Call 800-462-7413. But before we get back to the phones, that wonderful smell in the room right now.
It does smell good.
Is Texas turkey meatloaf.
It does smell good.
Doesn't that smell good? Listeners, doesn't that smell delicious?
That's right. Eat your heart out. Eat your heart out. It's good. You know, it's interesting. Meatloaf is not your gourmet recipe. I mean, I am a gourmand. I am a foodie.
Yeah.
I am an Epicurean. I love all different kinds of tasty treats. I love to experiment
with
things.
Well, this is comfort
food. You know what?
It's comfort food.
You know what? I love meatloaf.
Yeah, this is good comfort food.
I love meatloaf. And the idea of making a healthier meatloaf using turkey, using lean ground turkey, which makes it really healthy, the idea of using Texas in there, which means it's got spice in there, is taking to me an old recipe and making new tricks. My mother's meatloaf, I never really liked as a kid, and frankly, it was a bland meatloaf. I want the new meatloaf, the new modern meatloaf, the meatloaf that, you know, makes you feel really good and is tasty.
Yeah, but you've got to eat it with mashed potatoes, with gravy.
You've got to do it the right way. But
gravy,
you know what? But you've got to do it the modern
and
way. And a big salad. Green beans that are not loaded with butter. That's right. Green beans that you have that are not loaded with butter.
Yeah.
Salad that has a vinaigrette and that does not have a high fat.
But can I have mashed potatoes? Because I really need mashed potatoes.
Of course you can. But you don't have a gazillion amount of mashed potatoes. You have some. That's the whole idea. The whole idea is have your meatloaf, make it healthier. Have your mashed potatoes. Have it be the right amount of mashed potatoes.
Right.
And then with that, have fruits and vegetables. And then you've got a well-placed meal, a balanced meal that is delicious that's going to work for you.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay, one medium onion chopped.
A medium onion chopped.
That's right. You want to chop it nice and fine. Chop it. Not minced, but chopped.
Sure.
One bell pepper. It could be red or orange if you don't have that, or it's too expensive because those bell peppers can be expensive, especially if it's out of season. Use a green pepper.
Okay, chop up a pepper.
Half cup of fresh cilantro.
Half a cup fresh cilantro.
So immediately we have basically deviated from my mother's recipe because my mother didn't know the word cilantro.
Right.
If we said cilantro, she would say, is that someplace in Italy?
Right.
I'm sure that's what she
My
would
mom,
say.
Same thing.
Four garlic cloves. 2 cups of breadcrumbs.
2 cups of breadcrumbs.
Keep them fresh, folks. When you have breadcrumbs, if you don't use them within a month, toss them and buy new breadcrumbs. I mean, I used to have
so
breadcrumbs.
They're so expensive.
Yeah, I mean, they'd be in the drawer for years. You know, where are those breadcrumbs, right? Yeah. They're so expensive.
Yeah.
You know, they're like chips. Leave them in the drawer. They sog. They're ugly. Get some fresh breadcrumbs.
Okay.
Third of a cup of chili sauce. Right. Now, that's the chili sauce. We're not talking about, the amount of heat that you have will be a function of the chili sauce that you use.
Right. If you like it really hot, you'll get more.
Right. Or you can have a mixture of chili sauce.
Yeah.
1 pound of lean ground turkey. And it's got to say lean ground turkey. Otherwise, it's all dark meat and it's going to be fattier.
Yeah. You want the white meat in this.
1 egg.
1 egg.
2 tablespoonfuls of non-fat sour cream.
2 big T, non-fat sour
cream.
That's
right. So we're cutting down on the fat by using non-fat sour cream. Now, if you want to, you could use 2 tablespoonfuls of non-fat yogurt, but the sour cream, not much in there, adds a lot to the flavor.
Okay.
Very important.
Okay.
2 teaspoons of ground cumin.
to Little Tea, ground cumin.
Now, where do you think is the cheapest place to shop for cumin?
You've probably told me this on the radio 16 times. Why don't I remember that?
Asian grocery stores. You can buy cumin in a regular grocery store, and you will pay $3 to $4 a bottle for cumin. You go to an Asian grocery store, you get twice as much for $2. Cumin is a cheap spice in a Mexican grocery store, in an Indian grocery store, in a Southeast Asian grocery store. And for some reason that I've never figured out, in a mainstream grocery store, it's expensive. So buy your cumin. I buy lots of it when I buy it because for some reason it's a very expensive
spice. The next time
spice.
I need cumin, I'm going to go to that Asian grocery store.
Yeah, you're never making any of this. A teaspoon of salt, kosher preferred.
One little tea salt.
And a teaspoon of freshly ground black pepper.
One little tea freshly ground black pepper.
Okay, preheat the oven at 375 degrees. Then in a large bowl, combine all the ingredients and mix until combined. Do not overmix. And I use a spoon. And frankly, when I mix my ground meat, whenever I'm making a meatloaf, I tend to mix it with my hands. I clean my hands. I wash them and I mix them.
I'm going to eat while you're talking.
Transfer it to a loaf pan that's about 8.5 by 4.5 by 2.5. That's a standard loaf pan. Then top with the extra chili sauce. So this is a red chili sauce for spice. It'll be better. Line a shallow baking pan with foil and place the loaf pan inside the shallow baking pan. Why? Because when the drippings come out, and they tend to come out, they're not going to go over the oven and make your cleanup busier and take more time. Bake it uncovered for an hour and a half. Let the loaf cool. Put a loose foil over the top and let it cool for about 20 minutes so it firms up, and serve it, and bon appetit. Typical serving is 271 calories, only 6 grams of fat. That makes it a low-fat recipe. It's wonderful. You've got a little dietary fiber, not much, but 44% of your protein in a typical thing. Give it to me, Tom. You're eating too much.
And you know
how
what it tastes like. It's delicious. Adam only gave us one fork.
Great.
You have to use your fingers.
Isn't that good? It's delicious. I love it.
It doesn't really taste like meatloaf.
This is wonderful.
It's so much better than meatloaf.
This is wonderful. Wonderful.
We're happy to send a copy of the recipe to you if you'd like. And let me really recommend this. It is delicious. Mm. Address your request to Zorba Pastor on Your Health, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, zip code 53706. Be sure to enclose that self-addressed business-sized envelope so we can send this recipe back to you.
And in case you didn't know it, a podcast of this recipe is available on the iTunes Music Store.
A podcast on the iTunes Music Store. Everybody sure wants to know about that.
Everybody's got an iPod at home. Don't you have an iPod at home?
My wife does. I don't.
She can podcast. She can get the podcast recipe.
Do people really do this?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
they
when
do
you
it.
Say
a
pod,
lot of people do this.
I think of the pod people on Saturday Night Live. Remember that?
It's not the pod people. It's the podcast. Or you can get it on our website. Just log into zorbapastor.org, and that's the other way to get it.
How do you do that podcast thing?
You plug in your iPod. You go to the music store, and it automatically does it for you.
Wait a minute. You plug it into what? Into the computer.
Computer time.
And then what happens?
Then you go to the iPod music store, and it automatically download the recipe. You just have it preset. You don't have to do a thing.
You have to put the recipe up somewhere on the computer.
We put the recipe on there. They plug in the podcast. That's how we do it. It's a piece of cake.
Don't ask me. It's all magic. Our phone number is 800-462-7413. Question for Zorba, 800-462-7413. A listener joins in now, Zorba, in Green Cove Springs, Florida. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Oh, I have a question for Zorba.
Good.
And this is my question.
Mm-hmm.
I am a pretty healthy lady. I'm 42 years old, and recently I have developed allergies to foods that I love and have been eating all my life.
Like what?
Tomatoes, fresh tomatoes, and coffee, and peas, and cottonseed reacted. And I just wanted to ask, how does this happen?
Well, what symptoms do you have? When you say you have allergies, tell me what your symptoms are.
My symptoms are swelling. My lips swell. My eyes swell. At one point, I had one time when my throat started to really feel tight.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a little scary. So, you know, of course, I went to the doctor.
Sure.
He sent me to the allergist.
Mm-hmm.
And I underwent all the skin testing on my back. And those were the things that I found.
Well, first of all, food intolerance and food allergies can be two different things.
Mm-hmm.
If you take a food and you swell up and you have visible swelling to other people.
Oh yeah.
You know, that's a definite allergy. If you have visible swelling to other people and you develop hives or urticaria, which are hives that are very, very itchy, and you develop shortness of breath, and that becomes then a very serious issue. We don't know why. It tends to run in families. Some people have more allergies than others. Some people have, basically have families that, where everyone in the family has allergies, and desensitization for some of these can be done, but it's not very good. Desensitization therapy is where you have shots.
Mm-hmm.
So you can develop it. It also can disappear over time. So you may be allergic to tomatoes where you have an allergic reaction and it goes away. I mean, the good news is it may not continue for the rest of your life. Allergies can come and they can go. And we don't quite understand why people can get into this hypersensitive state, but they can disappear over a period of 3 to 6 months. So the coffee thing, it'd be a little tough for me to give up coffee with that coffee thing.
That was the hardest.
But once again, in a month or two, I would retry it and see what happens.
Yeah, and if you get hives, you say, darn that Zorba.
Yeah, that's right.
And then wait another month, try it, get hives. Darn that Zorba. Another month, hives. Darn that Zorba. The rest of your life.
Now, actually, I thought I may try different kinds of coffee to see
That may make a difference.
It.
Now, do you have an EpiPen?
Yes, I do.
Okay, because you should have an EpiPen with you.
Yes.
And if you try something like coffee, try it in the middle of the day, obviously not at night. Make sure that you're with other people in case you actually get a reaction. But I would try these things again and see what happens.
Okay.
Yeah, instant is good.
Well, that's helpful because I feel badly giving that up for the rest of my life.
No. And instant coffee is probably the worst coffee in the world.
It is the worst coffee in the world. I don't like instant. I'm a fresh ground.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Yeah, good luck with it.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Bye. 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Before we get to break, Zorba, a question from our show inbox. This one comes to us from Pamela in Guthrie, Oklahoma. We're talking a bit about instant coffee. Pamela writes, green tea is in the news as being beneficial for us. Now there are little packets of instant tea mix that you just pour into a bottle of water and drink. My question is this instant to-go green tea mix as good for a person as the green tea that you brew on the stove?
Oh, I think it probably is just as good. If you look at the Japanese tea ritual of serving tea to other people, it actually uses a tea powder that you mix in a special way with a little whisk, with a little bamboo whisk. I have been served tea in Japan, and that uses what we would call instant tea. It's ancient instant tea. I don't mean ancient meaning that the tea is 100 years old, but the tea, but the fact is these green tea studies are very interesting. They appear to, there may be a reduction in Alzheimer's disease, heart attack risk, stroke, and so on, and nobody quite knows if it's the way the tea is processed. People who drink green tea tend to have healthier diets than people who eat large amounts of instant coffee. Instant coffee being the dregs of the coffee
one
world.
One cup a day, that's
yes,
not large
one
amount.
Cup a day of the dregs. But so the answer is yes. I think instant green tea from a packet is probably just as good. I happen to like green tea, and the more I read about this, the more I think that should be my tea of choice for the midday.
Well, Zorba's Go On Forever wordy advice is always better than the instant kind you get from other public radio shows.
Go On Forever wordy voice. Give me a break. I want to give them all the options.
So keep your emails coming. Just send them to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have some really interesting research coming up and a medical myth buster. More of your calls, too, here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. The number again, 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. But research before the next call. Zorba, they're going to take a long look, they being the federal government, at autism, and for some reason, this is controversial.
Whenever we talk about autism, whatever we cause of, we talk about the causes for autism, the treatment for autism, it always prompts people
this
to get
this is a multi-state investigation that will involve 2,700 young children.
I think it's a great study. You know, clearly there are other people that don't think it's a great study. Let's talk about the study.
Yeah.
And first of all, the CDC, it's the Centers for Disease Control. It's a dynamite institution. They're very good studies. They do good science, even though the National Autism Association doesn't like them, the CDC does great science. What they're going to do is they're going to look at 900 children who have autism that's been diagnosed, 900 children with undefined other developmental problems. And these may be learning disability type problems, but other problems that they're also going to follow.
Okay.
And 900 randomly selected children who have no problems at all. And they're going to basically look at them from the ages of 2 to 5. Mm-hmm. And they're going to follow them through, and they're going to collect a lot of data. So in other words, they're collecting data in an ongoing fashion. You know, the problem with all autism research to date has been the fact that children get diagnosed from autism generally from the ages of 3 to 5, and then people look back and they say, well, we saw the signs here and there, and memories tend to be very erratic and they're not great. And what you want to do is you want to collect the data all along, and that's a very important issue.
So what do the autism people have to object to?
Well, the controversy has to do, first of all, we know there's an increase in autism in this country. It's not just a sampling error where we're more aware of autism and so we're looking for it more. There's very good data that there is an increase in autism. One of the issues with autism is that autism may be caused by thimerosal. Thimerosal was a mercury-containing a substance that was put in vaccinations given to children in order to stabilize the vaccination. And there's one theory, which is that mercury-containing substance, that this thimerosal, may be responsible for the autism.
Yeah.
To date, we still don't know. You know, we've shown, for instance, I think in very good scientific data, that the whooping cough vaccine is not responsible for autism. I think the data shows that. But on the other hand, the data is really hasn't really shown whether or not this mercury thing is there. And so that is not being studied, and that's one of the issues. That's one of the reasons behind this. But I think this will be a good study because we'll get a handle on basically what's going on and maybe find out genetically and environmentally what's going on.
The quote from the President of the National Autism Association, we don't want the CDC to do anything. We don't trust them.
So they think that there'll be a cover-up, but I think that that's a lot of faulty wrong. I think the CDC is a dynamite public institution.
So this is all about trust of the CDC? That's the only reason that there's an objection to this investigation taking place?
That is basically what we're looking at, and the real answer is to find out essentially what is going to work in order to help autism research move on, and I think this study is a very important study.
Our toll-free number is 800-462-7411. That's 800-462-7413. A listener joins in now, Zorba, in Lexington, Kentucky. Hi.
Hi. Hi, Tom. Hi, Zorba. Pleasure to have an opportunity to ask you my question.
The pleasure is all ours. How can we help?
Well, I'm a healthcare administrator of a multi-location flu shot clinics, and a number of the older folks that come by say they don't want to get their shot too early because they're afraid it's only going to, they heard on a national network program, a TV, that the flu shot's only going to last for 3 months, and I've never heard that, and I always thought it lasts a flu season, so I thought I would go to the horse's mouth, as we say in Kentucky, and get the real poop from you guys.
I love it.
The horse's mouth, and the real poop.
Come on. This is public radio. We can talk about these.
So do they wear out after 3 months?
Well, the answer is they are correct. If you get your flu shot too early and the flu season happens to be a late season, that's when the immunity tends to wane, tends to decrease, and that's a big problem. The problem is we can't predict when influenza is going to hit. So if influenza hits early, which is not common, let's say it hits in a November, December type time, and you have your shot, we'll say, at the end of September, beginning of October, and it hits early, you're fine. But if it turns out the flu season hits in March, you know, it may begin to wane. It doesn't last for exactly 3 months, but it does wane after about 3 to 4 months.
That's a crapshoot. You never know when to get it then.
Right. So the issue is, what happens is they try to guess when it is. But the issue is not just when they're guessing when it is. It's that you've got to get this whole group of people into various areas where they can get their flu shots. So it's a public health challenge because everyone wants to get their flu shot at the same time. And so the recommendations lately have been not to get your flu shot in September, but to get your flu shot in October. The flu season tends to be later in the season. It doesn't tend to be earlier in the year. It's usually not in November, December time. It's more likely to hit, you know, in excess January, February, and March. So
that's great. That's great. Now I know how to answer these folks, and I'll tell them that where I got the information, and that sheds a lot of light on the issue.
But I'll tell you something else that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Since we have given influenza shots to children, okay, the recommendation now is that you give it to children, I think it's 6 months to 3 years. I think that's the latest recommendation. Don't quote me because I'm not sure that's exactly right, but it's roughly 6 months to 3 years. Since we started giving that and since we started vaccinating children with other forms of a vaccine called the PBR7, which has to do with a pneumonia type of a bacteria that causes ear infections and can cause pneumonia. Since we've been doing that, we've cut down in pneumonia with adults. In other words, the reservoir for these bad bacteria are in children. Uh-huh. And then they infect the grandparents, and the grandparents then get that infection, if you will, get seriously ill and die. And so the death rate from pneumonia in adults, especially older adults, is dropped when children are properly immunized against influenza and pneumococcus, which is a bacteria. Isn't that interesting?
It is. It is, and that you've given me a lot of information here that I'm going to share with these folks when they come through.
That's great. And remember,
appreciate it.
It's on the test. So it's on the test.
And now when I got it from the horse's mouth, it's the inside track, so I know it's got to be right.
Thank you so much.
That inside track coming from a listener in Lexington, Kentucky.
Means a lot.
Horse country. Thanks a lot. We appreciate the call. And Zorba, it's time now for our medical myth buster. Fans of our recipe for Texas turkey meatloaf, and it is delicious, might be interested in this myth. It deals with heartburn. Question, can avoiding spicy foods ease heartburn?
The answer is
no.
No.
I got it right.
You got your Mythbuster right. The answer is no. Hot sauce, coffee, too much in the way of fruit juice. Do these things cause heartburn? Not really. Eating food, of course, causes heartburn if people happen to be prone to heartburn. Where does heartburn come from? It comes from the fact that you have acid that sloshes up from the stomach into the esophagus. The effective treatment for heartburn is to take acid reducers such as ranitidine over the counter, Prilosec over the counter. It gets rid of it. But it turns out that the theory that heartburn is really avoided by eating these foods turned out not to be the case. And this particular study came out of the Archives of Internal Medicine, uh-huh. came out of Stanford University. They looked at hundreds of studies, looked at heartburn since the 1970s. If people changed their diet, did they reduce the heartburn? And the answer was no.
I wonder
why they reduced their heartburn if they took medication, but they didn't do it if they changed the diet. The only thing that still seems to be a major factor is alcohol, especially taken late at night and big meals taken late at night.
I wonder how this myth, why did people start thinking that spicy foods causes
heartburn. You know,
heartburn.
I have no idea.
I never believed that. You know, that always seems silly to me because,
that you would think that spicy foods would cause it, but I have no idea. You can get heartburn, but you also get it from non-spicy foods.
Yeah, yeah.
It's that spicy foods are more likely to do it than the typical bologna sandwich that you eat every day for lunch.
I don't eat a bologna sandwich.
I used to eat a bologna sandwich for lunch, but those are the days before I got heartburn.
Interesting. If you have a myth you'd like Zorba to bust, we'd love to hear from you. Just send us an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, a listener, joins in now in Carbondale, Illinois. Hi.
Hello.
What's up?
Recently, about a month ago, I started the first
weight loss diet of my life, mm-hmm. and I've been having some good success with that. But I think potentially I have a side effect that I don't like, and mm-hmm. I'm not sure they're related, but that's why I'm calling, hoping you can see if they are or not.
What's the effect?
Well, about 1 week into my diet, I started to notice kind of a strong and pungent underarm odor, and I'm kind of wondering if maybe that's due to my diet.
Hmm.
I'm glad for the weight loss, but I'm really not sure I like this unpleasant smell, and it's right there, right out of the shower.
Are you eating some weird kind of stuff in the diet that would cause that smell?
Actually, no. I haven't, adopted any new diet. All I'm doing is just being extremely strict. I'm eating all the foods I normally do. I'm just, there's no intermeal eating, and, that's how I'm doing. It's just willpower.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, you may be, you're sweating in a different way because you're eating different foods. You may be sweating out some of the toxins that are in your body. And what I would do is treat the underarm odor by putting on an antiperspirant that works for you. That's all I would do. Over time, you're probably not going to – the same things are probably not going to happen. They're not really food specific. They're related by hormones that we have in our body, estrogen and androgen. They cause a stimulation of what are called the apocrine glands, which are little glands that are underneath our arms, and they produce that smell that in our society we don't like, and in other societies they do like it. They don't mind it at all. In France, they don't use deodorant. They consider the smell to be a normal part of being a human, and they like the smell, or they don't dislike the smell. I've never talked to anyone French to ask them, but they don't wear deodorant, and I would wear deodorant. That's all I would do. Just part of it. Enjoy your diet. How much weight have you lost?
I've lost 18 pounds.
That's a good amount of weight. So now, do you bother other people with these odors? Why are you bothered by it? Is it that you've noticed it or other people have noticed it?
Well, I've noticed it, and my husband's noticed it. It's not really so terrible. Is this going on because of the diet? Or is there something else occurring for
Maybe.
Me?
Maybe. It might be from the diet. I would just treat it with cosmetics. That's what I would do. I would treat it with cosmetics. I would continue with the diet. You're losing good weight. Keep it up. A diet is always a dirty word because what you want to do is make these changes for life, but I certainly would stick to it. So keep up the good work.
Yeah. Thank you very much for calling us at 1-800-462-7413. Zorba, thank you too.
A pleasure to be here, Tom.
For a copy of this week's recipe and all things Zorba, visit us on the web
at zorbapastor.org. Or if you want the recipe itself, we're podcast, and all you have to do is go to iTunes.
Whatever that is. And don't forget, our producer is available anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and is produced by Adam Friedrich. Our executive producer is Charles Monroe Kane. Brad Kohlberg is our technical director. Gigi Holland fills your recipe requests. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, expecting your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1013-Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.